You're listening to episode 84 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Brilliant Insights. Episode 84 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is Cinco de Mayo, 2013. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is one of the victors of the Battle of Puebla, and my brother James Furlough.
Freedom!
Yeah! Independence, one of the battles that was part of it, and it's mostly celebrated in America, but yay, Coronas.
It sounds cool.
Dude, yeah.
Let's be honest with each other. It's just like, sounds awesome.
It does sound awesome. And I like Mexican food and tequila and Corona. So, you know, it's like perfect holiday.
Well, there you go. Perfect holiday. So, by the way, just thought you should know, I don't know if you've noticed, but like my HP printer is gone.
Whoa. And the background is changing.
I'm still
offset too.
I am. That's because my desk moved temporarily and then it will move again permanently.
Yes.
Because I'm moving, actually.
Oh, man.
I'm in the throes of it.
Are you moving to California?
Yeah, no. Further north, technically, by about 10 minutes. Sorry, man. Going the wrong way. I am moving, and as such, it's just crazy. But we're not selling this place. We're actually going to fix it up and rent it out. And since I intend to do work during lunch and other off times, I'm actually going to work here. It's weird. I'm going to like sleep at this other place, get up, come here, work for HP, work for myself, and then go home and sleep.
Yeah.
It's kind of how it's going to go. And then so eventually I'll switch over there. But until then, so here's the deal. This room that I'm in was my office, a.k.a. the Bat Cave. Because it was where I came to hang out instead of Man Cave, because I'm superhero-like. But now, I'm in this place that is totally empty, except for, like, white walls.
Yeah.
And it's an entire cavern. The entire building is to myself now. So this is now, do you want to guess what I'm calling it now?
The Bat Cave. Oh, no, the Fortress of Solitude.
Yes! You nailed it.
The Bat Cave. Who am I talking to? Gosh, I should have been. I can't believe I guessed that wrong at all.
That's all right.
Dude.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question. Super important. Did you see the best superhero movie? Not best superhero movie, but the movie of the best superhero yet this weekend?
I'm going to take issue with what you just said, but I think the answer to your question is yes, with the caveat of he's not the best superhero.
Well, let's,
I'm reserving that one for June.
So, okay, but the thing is like, he is the best superhero because he has no superpowers outside of being an engineer. That's all he is.
What about the man that is Bat, like?
Well, whatever. Batman, he's ridiculous. He's just a rich playboy. He's not an engineer.
And
what has he ever engineered? Let's be honest. Did he engineer a super suit that allows him to fly around the world in like 20 minutes?
That's true.
And new power sources that have... Yes, actually, I guess he has, doesn't that technically?
Yeah, well, you
but
know.
But still. Hey,
that can threaten to blow
up. Exactly.
You know, yeah. No, I'm with you. I did see it. I saw it on Friday. Despite moving, you were going to kick out of this. So I actually, like, I picked up the moving truck, brought it back here, and then went to the movies, watched the movie, came home, and finished packing.
That's awesome.
Priorities. Which I have an article that we're going to talk about. It won't be about the movie, but you'll love it tonight. Which, interesting little factoid before we get to the heart of the show. I have like a three filter process, actually, for what articles we talk about.
Yeah.
Well, I guess technically four if you think about I filter which ones I subscribe to. But anyways, so I see like tons of articles.
You stats guys and your filters.
I know. But anyways, so I do
sure
that.
Biases, yeah.
And then when I see an article I like, I actually save it to Instapaper. for later review. And then once it's an Instapaper later on, when I transfer it over to our doc, again, it's like a filter. Okay, do I still think this is a cool story or not, right? And you know, if one's fallout where at the time I thought it was interesting, I read it again, I'm like, no, I don't think so. And then when it actually comes time to the show and we're highlighting what we want to do, that's another filter, right?
Right.
This week, I've got a ton of awesome stories. Yeah. And I just want to say that, you know, I just want to set the
tone,
saying like, I'm not just throwing up garbage, right? I actually am going through a process and trying to pick good ones, and there's a lot of good ones this week. So anyways,
I'm excited because I'll be totally honest, dude, I felt like the exact opposite this week. I was like, dude, nothing happened.
Yeah, you're going to love this. So
good.
Anyways, I'll let you do your intro and
we'll go. Guess what then? It sounds like it's about time for the intro where I say, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, Iron Man, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the show, we got a short disclosure.
Oh, man. I work for HP and am actually a Superman fan, but Iron Man is still awesome. And I like pretty much all superheroes. I'm pretty easy to get along with. However, I don't represent any of those superheroes or HP or any of their opinions. But I definitely have opinions about them.
By the way, if you're listening, if you're watching the show, this is like only off topic, and you're wondering why I like took a picture of us earlier, it's because...
Did you? I didn't even see you do that.
What? Dude. Like, I did it right in front of your face. Huh. Yeah, but I'm one of my lamest tactics of flirtation. But I'm all up on the what's it called? What's that one app? Snapchat.
Instagram?
No, not Instagram. I was Snapchatting, trying to impress a girl.
Is it working?
Letting her know that I'm a big deal on the internet. You know what? That probably wasn't one of my finest. Attempts at impressing, of courting. There have been other things that I've done that have been quite impressive, but
okay.
I'm slowly sprinkling all of my flavors in.
Like a weird light issue going on myself. Anyways,
okay. Yeah, dude, let's talk about tech. Oh wait! If you want to follow us throughout the week and get all sorts of crazy updates on like sports teams and other random happenstances and us doing exciting things, you can follow us on the Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlow,
and I am at James Furlow.
And the furloughbros.com, that has everything that you could possibly want. It's got all the show stuff. It's got the show cuts, which is like short bite-sized versions of the show where we cut up the show into cuts. And you can listen to them. We've also got all the links to feeds and videos. And we also, because we're awesome, we link all the articles that we talk about. And like James said, this is a good week for articles. So hit that up. Check that out. We've got a great catalog of past articles. And it's just awesome. Why aren't you there right now? It doesn't even make sense to me.
Because they're not posted yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is happening in the future.
Actually, if you're listening to this, you should be there. You're right.
Yeah.
You're cool.
Yeah, they're listening to this in the future, man. It's awesome.
Hello, future listeners. Yeah. How's the future?
Let us know if any disasters happen or something, because we appreciate that. The heads up. So what happened this week?
Oh, my gosh. All right. Here we go. First one, okay?
Okay.
Mars 1 has begun accepting video applications for a mission to colonize the Red Planet on 2023.
Oh, baby. That's soon. That's like 10 years from now.
Yeah. They're beginning their search for their worldwide search for astronauts who are never coming back. It's like they're looking for 24 to 40 candidates.
So this is like the anti-NASA policy, where NASA's like never killed somebody in space. Mars 1 plans on killing people in space.
They're like, every single one of you will die in space, on Mars. But the idea behind it is they're going to colonize it. But they're like, but you're never coming home. You're starting a colony. Very Mayflower-esque.
Are they going to have, like, babies on Mars, too? Or is it like you're going to start the foundations and we're going to send more people?
Yes and yes.
Nice.
The intent is to create a colony. Which,
are we worried about the natives in this case?
Not yet.
Not yet, yeah. But we will become very worried when it poses a situation. You aren't supposed to be here.
Yeah, and it looks like, I was still skimming. They're going to bring other groups, but like every 2 years, they're going to keep adding people. But the idea is, yeah, you're going to love the people you were with in more ways than one.
Are you gonna apply, James?
I have until August 31st to decide.
So yes or no.
So I don't know.
I don't know or no.
I know. Okay. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to. I like Earth. What can I say?
And to see how it goes with this girl I'm trying to impress.
Yeah, there you go. Just apply no matter what. So here's the crazy part, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to apply, and then what they're going to do is they are going to televise the they're going to create a candidate pool, and they're going to narrow it down to 20 to 40 people.
Okay.
And then those people will go, they'll move to the United States, and they'll spend the next 7 years as a full-time salary employee to Mars One. 9 months of each year will be spent learning dentistry, emergency medicine, general medicine, engineering, biology, mechanics, you know, stuff you'd want to know if you were stuck alone. And then the other 3 months will be spent in a Mars habitat mock-up, complete with 40-minute communication delays and all this stuff. Of course, they say the hardest thing they'll have to face during the simulation is a broken toilet. And but they said that that's when people get out of control.
Right. That's funny. Well, so this
is interesting. But they're going to televise the thing, too. I don't think I'm trying to say that. Or I think I thought it, but I don't know if I said it. So these people who get chosen, they'll be asking the public to rate their application videos to help them narrow it down.
And so it's kind of like American idolize the first manned mission to Mars.
Yep.
That's awesome. Nice job, America.
And by the way, the application fee is only $38.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's pretty reasonable. That's like a college app.
So you know what the horrifying part about this is? Like, this is just a brief shot of reality. Like, big engineering projects like this, no matter how well thought out, almost always have problems, and they almost always have problems over time, which means eventually, inevitably, they will probably have some sort of a horrible disaster that will almost definitely kill everybody that goes there at some point. It's going to be horrifying, man. This should be like sending people to the bottom of the ocean for the rest of their lives. Like, you spring a leak, everybody dies. Like, this is what's so crazy to me is why I think it's worth mentioning is because it's not like we're sending them there and they're going to live out their natural lives and then they'll get to 80 and they'll die at 80. Like, that's not what they're signing up for. They're signing up for a horrible disaster at some point that will kill them. And they know that. And it's going to be like worldwide news.
Why do you think there'll be a horrible disaster?
Because they're I have a question. What would you say? When was the last time we had a gigantic, massive engineering program that was tested over time using a completely new technology that didn't result in disaster at some point, a catastrophic failure?
Okay.
You think about, like, bridges. You think about skyscrapers. You think about, you know, rockets. Every time we've had these things, and the longer you push them, eventually there's a catastrophic failure.
Okay.
It just so happens that most of the time, when a plane falls out of the sky, like, you know, or actually a plane's a perfect example. When a plane falls out of the sky, it kills everybody. And if you give yourself enough time, eventually a plane will fall out of the sky. Now, it's more safe than driving in a car, but it's only because there's so many friggin' cars on the road. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, this is going to end in a horrifying disaster at some point. With lots of people dead.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to cost them $6 million to send their the first group of four to their new home.
$6 mil? That's not bad.
Yeah, I know. They're going to use SpaceX to fly them.
That's awesome.
And what's really interesting...
Elon Musk is a murderer. What?
And what they're going to do is they literally, once they're there, they're like, you're free to do whatever you want. You are literally creating a brand new civilization. They will make their own holidays, their own laws. They'll decide what to do when they're there. They won't be taking orders from anybody here. They will become an independent nation, essentially. Like, we need to send mature people.
Yeah.
Shall I? Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, it sounds like a holiday air day. Dude, they're never going to take a – they'll never take a break. They're just never going to take a break.
Oh, yeah. They'll take a break like a farmer takes a break.
Right, exactly.
You don't.
They'll, like, fall asleep for 5 minutes. Oh, I take a break. Because if you mess up for, like, 5 minutes –
which is pretty much all of the people I would accept. I was like, have you been a farmer? Yes, you can come.
Yeah, are you a super genius physicist farmer? Okay, you're in.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
I just want to know, like – I would bring people A, who are mature, but B, just like people who always work hard, who never take a day off, who don't care about convenience, and you know what I mean.
Yeah.
People who are just hardy, who are like, yeah, I'm just going to work hard. I'm going to get it done.
I would be more willing to pick somebody who is not enamored with the idea of colonizing Mars.
Yeah,
they're not starstruck by the stars in a very literal sense. They're not really impressed by it. They're just doing it because it needs to be done, and they're going to do the work. I mean, which is actually, that's why they picked Neil Armstrong to step on the moon first.
You also want people who are there for a reason, who have something to live for.
Neil Armstrong was, like, very dedicated to, like, the pursuit of technology and science. Like, that was what he was doing. But to him, that was the job. That was the goal. And it was his willingness to call abort on the thing. He wasn't so set on going to the moon that he was unwilling to call abort if it meant saving everybody.
Right.
He was not willing to risk it, and that's what they wanted. Somebody who was a little more, who wasn't so excited about it that they'd risk everybody's lives in order to do it and kill everybody. And that's kind of what you need. You need somebody who's like, yeah, they're determined this needs to be done. And I can do it, so I will do it. Not because I think it's going to be really cool, interesting.
Man, I love this.
I can't believe they're going to let us vote on it.
That's the world we live in. And that's part of how they're getting it for $6 million. I think there's going to be huge advertising pieces to this. But I love one of the commenters. He's like, if this plan works, the colony will need to advance really quickly to protect themselves from Earth. They'll need to develop long-range weapons in secret and keep Earth corporations on a short leash. Oh, man.
It's kind of true.
I love it. And then,
what research is that?
Want to live or die on Mars? The real question is, what will they die of?
Yeah, exactly. See, that's the thing, man. Like, all these people are going to die. It's going to be such a big deal. First dude who died on Mars. And unfortunately, I think it will go, as I predict, where it'll be catastrophic and it'll be like the first 20 people to die on
Mars.
Maybe
be like a Cain and Abel type thing. It'll just be a straight up murder.
They all slaughter each other. Oh, my goodness. That would be exciting. That would be good news.
Yeah, so anyways, we're going to Mars, man, and we're not just doing an expedition.
Woo!
We are setting up a colony. We're doing it. It's cheap enough that it's going to happen no matter what. Now, whether or not it works is a different story, but they seem to think that they can do it for $6 billion. And you just need to pretty much just triple that number, right, to get to the actual cost. And, which is still, like, reasonable. Apple could write them a check today. And be like, yeah, we'll sponsor this. Just put a big apple on the red planet. So when we look at it in a telescope, all they see is us.
Whatever. You know what's crazy about this is I love that they're using the SpaceX rockets because Elon Musk was the human being, the real person that they used to model Tony Stark of Iron Man off of. And this is totally an Iron Man type thing to send people to Mars with all of his money and technology. Like, it's perfect. So awesome.
That's cool. So hey, when are you getting your application in? When are you making your?
I don't know.
What is it? 70-second
video.
But I am
starting the hashtag. I'm definitely going to start the hashtag Elon Musk is a murderer. out of love and admiration for the man, because I like him a lot. Please don't be mad at me. And but I don't know. I guess I'll try. Why not? Whatever. Hey guys, send me to Mars because it'd be awesome. If I got picked,
Would you go? Would you go if you got picked?
Oh no. Well, like I said. Let's see how it goes with this Snapchat.
I am unfortunately married and have a dog.
I'm going to tell her that that's what how you described it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. If I was not, I would totally do it. Oh, yeah. If I could bring Jesse and Vinny along, I would probably do it.
Oh, man. That's crazy. I don't think I would. I like Earth a lot. I'm a pretty big fan.
Yeah, me too. That'd just be exciting.
If I could come back, even if it was years later, I would.
You never know. But you could. You know, that's...
No,
you could create a lot
part of the deal.
You can go back to Earth every once in a while.
That's like part of their deal, though. Like, you can't come back to Earth.
Okay. But once you're there, you make your own laws and your own rules. Forget what they said. I'm coming back.
Yeah, are you going to make your own rocket, too?
Well, I mean, there are certain, you know, barriers. But we got video.
Yes.
40-minute delay, whatever, you know. You can figure it out.
Swim back to Earth through space.
Swim.
Anyways. So, yeah.
Speaking of...
So, IBM...
You're doing it? All right, go ahead.
What? You're going? Okay, let me tell you. We're going to go to the opposite end of the scale. We're going to go from the macro to the micro. There's this cool video I want you all to check out. Basically, IBM made this, like, movie. And, like, you know, you're like, why? Why did I go watch an IBM movie? Well, because basically what they did was they had this little, like, thing that allows them to move atoms a lot around on a super micro scale. And they made a short movie, and then they have like the images of where the atoms are. And they made this little image of this little guy out of atoms, molecules actually, playing with a ball. And they're all molecules. It's super tiny. It's just really kind of a cool demonstration of the technology. And all the YouTube commenters were complaining about the fact that they spent all that time and money on this sort of a thing. But check it out. It's pretty interesting. That's all. It's really, I as soon as I started it, I was like, there's no talking.
They are such geeks.
So if you're not going to narrate this, it's really kind of pointless.
There's a little. I was just letting it be background music as you talked.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, yeah, there's a little, just seriously, go to the website and check it out. It's a visual thing. And the best part
again, it's not that the movie itself is like an amazing story. It's just the fact that they're doing this via moving atoms.
Yeah. And, like, each frame, they move the atoms around, and then they take a picture, and that's a frame. And then they make the next frame. So each frame is composed of on a molecular level. It's pretty impressive, actually.
It looks totally fake.
What do you mean?
Well, just like, you could have done this computer graphics.
Well, yeah, but they didn't. That's the point.
It's a minute 33-second commercial for IBM. Cool.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's cool.
Iron Man was a 2.5-hour commercial for Cisco Systems. Like, what the heck? Like, did you notice that? Because I noticed that every time they talked about, okay, let me send it to the Cisco cloud to analyze this. It's like, really? The Cisco cloud? Come on, Iron Man. That's super lame.
Super lame. Okay, here's a transition.
Okay,
speaking of superheroes, are you a superhero or a supervillain?
Ooh, I am probably a super. I don't know.
I'm
playing a video game. I'm a supervillain.
Okay, so the idea was, if you were given superpowers,
mm-hmm.
would you be good? Would you use use them for good or would you use them for evil?
Okay.
It's kind of the, you know, the question and the thought.
Yeah.
And so they started testing these things. And like, so for example, one of the things they did was they had people go through these simulations, okay, where they had two sets of people where one set was given the ability to fly, and then the other set was a passenger in a helicopter, essentially. And in both situations, they had to, like, save somebody, okay?
Yes.
And they set it up so that in both situations, they saved the person at, like, the exact same time. And they – or I should say, in both situations, they saved the person's life in the nick of time. Does that make sense?
So they
both do a heroic activity.
Okay.
Okay. But one has the gift of flight and the other one is a stupid passenger in a helicopter. You know, they're a normal human being.
Kind of like Iron Man with his super suit. Yes.
Yeah, kind of, but yeah, sure.
Do they use
Iron Man so much better than being a passenger in a helicopter? I mean, come on.
Yes.
Anyways. After the simulation, the experimenters sat down to debrief each subject. And as they talked, the experimenter would, in quotes, accidentally knock over a canister full of pens. Then they would wait 5 seconds before picking them up. They found that the volunteers in a helicopter took an average of 6 seconds, with many of them never offering to pitch in at all to help. But those who had been given the Superman gift of flight jumped right in, and in most cases, helping out even before the other person started to do it. And so, little experiment, but basically what they found was that having superhero powers can spark benevolent tendencies. Which you're like, okay, interesting. But then they took it to the next level, and basically what they found was that if you had a superpower that was highly public, such as, like, you know, flying around, everyone can see that you're flying, you know? They're like, you tended to become a good guy, a superhero. But if your superpower was something that was secretive, such as, like, X-ray vision or invisibility, like, yeah, you tended to go down the supervillain path.
And they were the people that would knock the can over for the experimenter.
Yeah, exactly. It would just, like, make it harder for them to pick them up. Oh, that can't move.
You'd kick it around. Like, oh, sorry. Sorry you couldn't grab that pen.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just interesting that, you know, that they were doing this. And one of the reasons why they were looking into this, besides the fact that we're coming into superhero summer movie and it was super topical, is that they're increasingly, through the use of technology, making us kind of superhuman in a lot of ways. You know, yeah, whether that's, you know, helping us to run faster, run longer, you know, be able to see further. You know, you think about, you know, I don't know, just a lot of the different technological, we talked about, like, the super arm, right, that you were talking about, the arm prosthesis that, you know, that for replacing limbs, yeah, you know, things like that, where technology is slowly enhancing humans, and so they're like, so are we going to create good humans or bad humans? What's the route that we're headed here? And but yeah, so basically what they found was, as long as it is, like, a public thing, chances are you'll be good, and you'll want to help people, and you will feel compelled to use your enhancements for good. If it's more of a secretive type of thing, we're in trouble.
That's more proof why public shaming is important.
But
it spurs people to be good people.
Spurs people to be good people. But yeah, so exactly. That was so yeah, I thought that was just super, super interesting. I was like, apparently these things can be kind of measured a little bit.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So there you go. That's superhero powers.
I like it.
There you go. That'll be one for, like, when you're having dinner with friends or something. Did you know?
Yeah, seriously.
That's what that one's for. you know, that and when you're like, when you're going to go see Iron Man or Superman or, well, Star Trek's not a superhero, but it's still awesome. Thor, all those ones this summer.
Yeah.
I heard Pacific Rim or Pacific something. I heard that one's supposed to be like amazing.
You know what? I'm really glad that they started their marketing campaign on that so early, because when I first saw it, I was like, this looks stupid. And now I can't wait to see it.
I literally, the first time I heard about it was this evening, which I know is what happens when you don't watch television. But
I don't watch television, but I like obsessively watch movie trailers. So.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah, but I saw clips of it, and I went, oh, this looks cool. What is this? So, and they were debating which movie would be like the best one of the summer.
And they thought Pacific Rim would be the best one of the summer?
No, they were like doing a top 10 list, and that one
is clearly Ender's Game is going to be the best movie of the entire year. Like, oh,
I was a question. I was hearing Iron Man was all top 3 on their list.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, it's going to be Ender's Game.
Ender's Game. I didn't know that one.
You didn't wait, James, are you typing?
Oh, I was. Sorry.
I was just like, you went out, you meant to spare. What'd you say?
Oh, I hate that feature. I was saying I didn't know the Ender's Game was coming out this summer.
Technically it's November. I don't know if it actually counts as summer. They think that Iron Man's going to be the movie of the summer. Interesting.
They think it's actually going to make more money than Avengers did.
I could believe that. It's a dang good movie.
Which was really the blockbuster hit of last year. So,
yeah. Okay.
Well, because they released it internationally before releasing it to the U.S. for some reason, and it was already breaking international records.
Yeah, it's making piles of money.
So they're like, it could have a $200 million weekend, and that would put it right on track with Avengers. And since it's doing better than Avengers internationally, they're like, okay, you know, mathematically and blah, blah, blah. Plus, it was the first one of the summer, which means it'll probably have the longest run and all that stuff.
Yeah. The great gets to be, and Star Trek's not going to beat it because, I mean, Star Trek or Star Wars Episode 7. I'm still so upset about that. that he's making both Star Wars and Star Trek. It just seems wrong to me. And I like J.J. Abrams so much. It just seems wrong. Ugh, whatever. I'm angry. I can't even talk about it.
That's fine. Do you want to talk about your Netflix one, or I got another one if you want to?
We'll talk Netflix. So, speaking of movies and...
Good.
Yes. And so Netflix has got some pretty awesome hard data. Basically, they've come out and said any market that they expand into, they see a precipitous and appreciable, a gigantic drop in piracy in that market. So, it seems like really obvious that when you give people convenience, variety at a reasonable price point, they will, you know, what's easier, what's better than
ask
free?
Apple about that.
Convenient. Yeah, I know. it's classic. What's easier? What's better than free? It's convenience. That's it. And people are basically like, what you're asking for is you're asking for a legal torrent that's very easy to use. And that's what you're paying for, because they don't feel like they're paying for content. They feel like they're paying for a delivery system, and it's working really, really well. Spotify is seeing similar numbers because even with iTunes, people were still pirating like crazy, but they found that like between Spotify and Netflix, piracy is just dropping off of a cliff in markets that they're there. Yeah, it's nutty. And not to mention,
which means that message was not intended for us, but for all the movie studios and television studios. Look, guys, just sign a deal with us. We will give you actual money. The torrenting will stop. It will be okay.
Well, what's ridiculous about it is that, like, this week, not only did Netflix, like, release this big thing where they're like, yeah, look, we make you more money because people don't steal your content anymore. They did that at the same time that a couple of studios, including WB, pulled 2,000 titles from Netflix so that they can move them over to WB's streaming network. Because they're idiots, and they don't get the fact that people aren't going to pay an extra $30 or whatever their ridiculous price is for an additional streaming service. Like, people barely put up with Hulu Plus and – well, they don't really. Like, it's a very small market that has the cross-section of Hulu Plus and Netflix. People usually pick one or the other, and they'll just cancel one service and jump over the other one briefly and then back and forth. Like, I don't get it. I don't get the thought. It's just so stupid.
And the WB is doing only their stuff. They're not trying to be a content warehouse. Well,
for right now, it's just their stuff, but I think they're trying to pull other studios in.
Because Amazon's doing it. I feel like it's our game already over. You know, it's kind of like with Apple and iTunes, where it's like, sorry, dude, if you want to sell your music, that's where you go. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I guess there was room for Spotify in there, which is really a different type of service. But
well, that's the thing. Spotify is a different thing than buying your content. But, you know, there's not really going to be – Spotify's winning, man. And you can't just come in unless you pull all of your content from Spotify and open up a competing service. But you got to be more than just the content. I don't know. It's just so stupid.
Well, the deal that like with Netflix is, A, they've got a ton of content. It's not the newest stuff, and I get that. And that's where the WB is going to try to compete. And, you know, by taking rid of the content. But Netflix has the distribution, mm-hmm. which – you know, it's crazy, and the thing just works really, really well. And
not to mention the fact that they have the most, they are the biggest use of bandwidth in the world.
And, like, and they're reasonably priced.
Yeah, and that's not, but I mean, just from a technological perspective, that's not something to, like, bat your eyes at. Like, that's not nothing. That's a big deal. And
yeah,
and the WB, they're just so ugh. But they like if you look at like their Ultraviolet service where you like download, you like you buy the Blu-ray and they give you like mm-hmm. a digital download, and it just never works for anybody. It's always really stupid and everybody hates it. And that's what you're gonna get from their streaming service. On one hand it's like I understand the attempt, but it's just such a befuddled like I don't hold it against them for trying. What I hold against them is how terrible they are at this sort of a thing.
Well, that's not their core competency, right? They
right.
make and distribute videos, you know, shows, whatever.
Right, they're content creators.
They're not a tech company.
They're content creators, not a giant tech, you know, virtual distributor. They're a different thing than what they're trying to sell, and it's not going to, you know.
Good luck to them, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
They'll see their revenues fall and then start complaining and be like, the internet. See,
and the real problem that they're going to run into is that Netflix, when they finally decided to go the other direction where they're now getting into the content game, they've gone big. They're not, you know, they're not pulling any punches. They're moving very slowly and they're doing great content.
By the way, speaking of the content, I'm checking up and everyone listening can just kind of hear because I'm just curious. I recommended House of Cards to our beloved father.
Yeah.
Did he tell you about that and say, like, hey, can I watch it?
No.
Unbelievable. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
just following up on our referral.
I'm super stoked for Arrested Development.
Oh, I know you are.
Oh, my goodness. I can't even stand it. I'm like,
I hear they might be doing Firefly.
You know what? That's like everybody's like desperate for it, but we'll see. It's funny. I still have this weird relationship with Firefly because I was like, I was one of the early like fans because I like sci-fi a lot. Yeah. I watched the first three. I don't know if I've told you this story.
You saw them out of order or something because they
right.
they accidentally broadcast them out of order.
Fox is ridiculous and they broadcast the third episode as their season opener, so I had no idea what was going on. I've just never sat down and watched the season, but everybody was like, oh my goodness, Firefly is the best. I'm always like, dude, I was into it. I'm like the hipster of it all. I'm like, I was into it before you were, and now I'm not into it because I'm cooler than that. Like, I saw the original Out of Order episodes.
You're one of those fans.
Oh, man.
What's his name is doing Castle now, and he's, like, fat, so I don't know if, you know, no offense to him, he's still a very good looking man.
No offense to him, he's still a very good looking man.
But
fair enough. My first exposure to him was the single
bad horse, he's bad. You're talking about Dr. Evil sing-along blog?
Yeah. Dr. Horrible, I think.
Yeah. What do they call him? Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. Yeah, which is we highly recommend it. Yes. That was a JJ. No. Joss Whedon vehicle.
Which is why it had all those characters that
you know
and love from his stuff. But
yeah,
that was my first exposure to that character, and probably to because I watched Angel before that, so that was my. Probably my very first exposure, but
what?
How,
he was an Angel?
No. I'm just saying that director, that style.
Oh, to Joss Whedon, that
comedy,
yeah.
To my director hero.
Yeah, gotcha.
So, we'll keep it the movie thing for just a little bit, but let me type real quick.
Okay, I'm going to fill.
Okay.
Right here. Okay.
Because I don't want to be muted out.
I understand.
This is super interesting to me. DreamWorks is paying $33 million for some
That's
content.
That's a lot of millions of dollars.
For a new channel, actually.
Nice.
For a channel called Awesomeness TV.
I really want to watch it.
This channel is on YouTube.
Ooh.
So
I will watch it then.
I don't think this is probably not the first purchase of a YouTube channel. But $33 million for a YouTube channel.
So somebody
there are a lot of times where I say we're in the wrong business, but I think we're in the right business right now.
So let me get this straight. Somebody owns Awesomeness TV, the YouTube channel, and DreamWorks has decided they want to own it, so they're buying it from
Yes, well, okay, but let's be clear. Like, Awesomeness TV is, like, they've spent, like, $3.5 million building it and doing it. So,
well, that's not that much.
It's not, like, it's not just, like, you and me making a channel. It's not, what was that, Lonely Girl 57 or, you know, it's not that.
It's not Liana, a.k.a. Overly Attached Girlfriend.
Yeah. It's more, it's professionally done. I mean, you know, it's as professional as a $3.5 million, you know, budget can get you. But essentially these guys made it's a video channel for tweens. And I've actually seen a few of their videos because I was watching when you go to their YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/awesomenesstv, they have like a little intro video that just plays that gives you like a, you know, tells you about the channel and what you can expect to see from it. And so they're showing a bunch of clips from a bunch of their videos that they posted. And I was like, oh, I've actually seen a bunch of these. Huh. Cool. So I'm like, so it's at least popular enough where people like me are unknowingly watching that channel, you know, at least the popular items. So they've had a few that have gone viral enough. I don't think it's, I watch more than normal, so it doesn't have to go too viral for me to see it.
Right.
You know, but they've done very well. I don't know any of their YouTube stats or any of that stuff. Other than, they've got 14 million subscribers and 800 million video views overall.
It's not bad.
No. Is that DreamWorks Animation will acquire a thriving Yeah, that's right. It's cool. They're going to, it's kind of a weird, like, acqui-hire type of thing-ish. But the idea is that DreamWorks wants to start up their own YouTube channel, and these guys are going to run it for them, essentially, and probably keep doing Awesomeness TV at the same time, but also turn it into a DreamWorks channel and stuff like that.
They were buying the talent as much as they were buying the channel, is what you're saying?
Yeah, and now we're going to see some more DreamWorks-type stuff come out. But yeah, they've done, what was the, I'm trying to remember now what some of those videos were. But whatever. Yeah, if you just go to youtube.com/awesomenesstv, you'll watch that little intro video and you go, oh yeah, cool, I get it. I mean, it's literally, it's like They do interviews. They do roundtable discussions. They have little kids on there. They've got like teenage stuff. They actually did like this one drama video series on it. And
nice.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. But it's just like, man, that YouTube is becoming a real thing. Yeah, I mean, I know it has been and it is, but it's cool to see.
Did you just say that YouTube is becoming a real thing?
Well, in the sense
that's awesome. That's a great. These are the kind of insights that you guys gain by listening to the Brother Bros Tech podcast.
No. In the sense that you can create a YouTube channel and make some serious money and be a serious content creator and, you know, a real entertainer that is based and housed on YouTube. Because it used to be that, you know, infamous YouTube money.
Yeah, internet money.
Yeah.
Some of that internet money.
It was some internet money, Canada.
That's, yeah.
One of the best South Park episodes ever.
There's like four or five that I think are just quintessentially great, and that was one of them. Don't call me buddy, man.
That one was awesome. but the way that it used to work was you'd have a popular YouTube channel as a personality, and then you'd get hired by a studio and like do real TV or a real movie or something.
Right.
And that's how you would then make your millions through that. Or the Bieber way, right? You start on YouTube, get famous, and then you move into the real recording,
By the way, I was surfing around Reddit today at some point, and somebody was like live updating one of the top threads was about the Biebs in Dubai being like threatened with arrest like after he got done with a concert. I was like just updating everybody with like all the different comings and going because he's like a train wreck now and he's like speeding around the place in the Lambo and
didn't see that coming.
I'm gonna say, yeah, it's a weird world that the rise and fall of Bieber's gonna be an interesting thing to study because like he's the first of the internet sensations in that I really believe both his rise and his fall are gonna be like different sides of the same internet universe and kind of how they all happened mixed in with a healthy dose of traditional media. I don't know, it's fascinating. But yeah, it's cool. It's funny. There was an article that I didn't link because Eric Schmidt is a really smart dude.
Hold a pretty high spot for a while, and it wasn't because he was a slouch.
Brilliant insights brought to you by the Furlough Bros. So the thing is about Eric Schmidt is that he's like one of the most annoying dudes whenever I hear about it, because he's always talking about like tech trends and like this thing is happening
through his Google Glass
and and it only ever has to do with Google. It doesn't matter how much he has to hamstring it. He's like, TV is done because of YouTube, and you're like, you're not even gonna mention Netflix. If you don't want to bring that one up, okay. But there was like a valid point about it that YouTube is having an effect. It's starting to change things, and not to say that obviously Netflix from an internet traffic perspective is a bigger deal, but I think from a total use and how people spend their time, YouTube is clearly a big deal and will help lead to the collapse of traditional media channels. And it's cool to see DreamWorks getting on the bandwagon going, maybe we should figure this one out because like we were talking about, they're leveraging a major tech company as a distribution channel while they do what they're good at, which is content. That's cool.
The one thing that I've seen though, and I don't know how to address this even though it sounds like these guys have figured it out. Is like oftentimes I'll subscribe to a channel because they'll be doing something cool and it's fun. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I want more of this. And then they do whatever their idea is, and then the channel just dies. It goes dormant, I guess, essentially. Yeah. They don't, they never shut it down. But they just stop updating. They move on to their next thing, which is kind of like
vloggers.
Yeah, really. It does. It feels like it is like I've seen that where you see that with friends too, where they start a blog and then they say what was on their mind and then they're done.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you just needed to write this down. I get it.
Okay. Right. And that was one of the, you know, just to give people a little bit of background. I mean, that was one of the challenges with this show early on, was deciding, like, part of the reason why we decided to do this is because we found that every week we were talking to each other on the phone, talking about the same things and continuing this conversation. And it was the realization that we could actually do this to some degree on a regular basis. But I feel like both of us for the first 6 months were kind of surprised that we still had something to talk about, you know, and like, all right, here we are, like, you know, Yancey's like asking us what special thing we're doing on, for our 100th, you know, episode, any free giveaways, which, by the way, yes, we are giving something away free, year subscription to the podcast free. Whoever wins, we're going to take entrance. You won't have to pay for it for an entire year. Wait, what do you mean we don't charge right now?
No. This is a serious one. We'll think about it. We'll make the official proclamation.
I can say. I actually do want to think about it. But
we maybe will pay your application fee for Mars.
Oh my goodness, that'd be awesome.
You could we will sponsor you.
Oh my goodness. Mars. Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That's, you know, honestly, what you said, it was $38. I'm in.
You'll sponsor two people going to Mars.
Honestly, that'd be fun, dude.
That's within our price range of giveaway.
We ain't giving away no iPads is what we're getting at.
No.
Not or yet.
Google Glasses yet. Yeah. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah. But what's interesting about it is, like, it's a challenge, you know, like figuring out, like, well, it's the challenge of all, you know, all TV series and stuff. How do you make something syndicatable? How do you make something that's you know, that you can regularly release it with new content, and it's interesting over time, and it has to evolve with it, you know, and the fact that
And it's like the one thing that we should do that we don't is that we should have actually another meeting each week, you know, just for like an hour or something, where we actually plan out our shows and think ahead and actually have those thoughts, like, hey, 100's coming up, here's the actual date of it, what do we want to do, here are all the different tech shows or the big events that are happening, what are we going to do, you know, so that we time it so that we're not always just like right after. Sometimes we're a little bit before, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do some more planning, I guess. I think it would be like something that would make our show better, but we're not going to do it. The problem is that when we have that meeting, we tend to talk about tech stuff.
That's the real problem. It's like, so often we're like, we can't talk about this. Wait for the show.
Don't talk to me.
Yeah.
I'm avoiding you.
You can't remake the magic very easily.
I know. But this is funny.
But all that
to say, like, you find that there's, but this happens with television shows too, right? Where they, like, they have an idea, they have a concept, they share it with you, they make it, it's however long it is, and then it's done, right? But oftentimes these shows are embedded on bigger channels, and the channel is what keeps going. And sometimes you're like, this channel is amazing, and then it goes through times of slow and then times of awesome.
Right.
And it changes. Like, it'll be like dramas, and then they'll be doing unscripted dramas, and then they'll do, you know, comedy type stuff, you know, and these channels shift and morph over time. And it's like,
TLC used to be the Turning and Learning channel, and now it's the freak show, sideshow on the circus. You know, it goes through phases and changes and things.
Right. And it's like the people who, I think the successful YouTube channels, like Awesomeness TV, they actually have like sub channels, I guess, you know, playlists essentially.
Right.
And so the channel keeps going, even though, like, I was talking about this one, they had this drama of the runaway teens and, you know, finding love, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't the target market.
This sounds fascinating.
But I'm sure that they told the story and then moved on. They were done.
Right.
But the channel kept going, and, you know, and you could still subscribe to the other stuff. And, you know, and so it's like, some of those bigger channels, they're going to start figuring that out. Oh, there are some of these. We need to have content that's out there consistently. We can't just have an idea for a channel and then make another channel later on. They need to get, I don't know. It's weird to feel and to figure out. I know I've thought about this, like with us, it's weird. Like this all gets posted on my personal YouTube channel, which is cool. But every once in a while I upload my own video. I'm like, oh, this is going to be weird because I have subscribers now who are subscribing for the podcast, not to watch me open up a Christmas present, or to watch a walkthrough of my new home.
Yeah.
I don't, they might, but you know what I mean? So there's just like, so I'm like, oh, should we have a separate YouTube channel, or is that just a playlist? I don't know how that works. So there's still some stuff that needs to be figured out on the YouTube front, but they're figuring it out, which is the important part.
Yeah, and they're making money on it. That's what's,
yeah,
that's
people are successful, and that's going to feed NBC more success, and it's cool. DreamWorks, if you're looking for a tech show to add to your arsenal,
yeah, get, you know who to call. Deals on the internet, so
we think that's cool. I'll take a piece of the $33 million. I don't need the whole thing, though. They got like incentives and other stuff, which could push it all the way up to $117 million. You know, if you want to structure something like that, that's cool. You know,
it's quitting money.
That's yeah. A lot less of that is quitting money.
Yeah, exactly. Ironically.
So that's DreamWorks. Totally awesome. It's youtube.com/awesomenesstv. Just check it out. You'll, like I said, if you watch that intro video, you'll recognize a lot of this stuff.
So, yeah. Okay. All right.
How about this one? It's about time we change gears. LinkedIn has made an adjustment to their online resumes, which is actually awesome. And I think they are going to kill off a whole bunch of other of those smart resume side, you know, smaller companies.
Good, because those are usually awful.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the way it is. Because the dream is we have this thing called the internet, which allows for you know, interactive, visual, multimedia types of displays of information. And the resume is traditionally like printed text on a piece of paper. And you're just like, and you just, you, everyone feels it in their bones that there should be more there. And it's an area that is ripe for disruption. The problem is getting any sort of, you know, network effect, or a big enough or enough people using it that you don't have the chicken and the egg problem. And LinkedIn, as you know, is big, and yes, you essentially have your resume on LinkedIn, but it's all typed again. And they've recently got into like the tagging of your skills, which is cool, I guess. And so a lot of services have been able to take their API and import that into their thing, so you don't have to rebuild it, and then they just visually show it a little bit better. And LinkedIn has bought a couple of those people, and I haven't seen a whole lot of change through that, other than the way that you input it's a little bit better. But they are now taking it up another step. They are allowing you to actually create a portfolio resume style.
Interesting.
Yeah, so in addition to the text, you will now be able to upload all sorts of things, like pictures, photographs. You'll be able to put videos in there in addition to the text, which I'm like, okay, text, picture, video, done. Because they're like, it's say, like someone like me, I sit there and I was like, I do, you know, I create reports, essentially, which are like, okay, boring. And I've really been struggling with the way to describe to people like what it is that I do, which the current description I have is I'm in a business where it's just full of a whole bunch of numbers and stats, and you know, it's just big spreadsheets of stuff. And my job is to take it from this huge spreadsheet full of numbers and turn it into something that is digestible by a normal human being, which often involves creating a chart and simple statistics, you know, based off of it in a meaningful way. And I finally have done something that's not, that is not proprietary, that I can share with people if they ask me more. Cause I did this real estate report. And so you talk about MLS data, which is nothing but like this huge list of data where it's got like your address, the square foot, the price, bedrooms, baths, you know what I mean? It's got a whole bunch of information, and then it has all the listings and sales in the area, which is in the tens of thousands. And yeah, exactly. And I've, you know, and I created a one page report that summarizes all of that. So you can get a real quick look at how's the real estate market doing in, say, Corvallis. And, and so now I can show people that and they go, oh, okay, I get it. So what I could potentially do, and I will probably do this because I think this is cool, is I can take that one page report, turn it into a picture, essentially, and then upload it and go, here's an example of a report that I made. And so someone can look at that and go, oh, cool, got it. And I might be able to maybe I have to get permission for HP stuff, but actually put up an HP report and go, here's the type of reports that I do for HP. And same with videos, where you can do a, you know, if you made a video, like maybe I'll take some the best of clips of Furlough Bros and I could put it up there and, you know, and have that video montage clip playing. I could just do a simple, like an introduction. Hey, here's me, here's my philosophy on life and business, and I'm awesome, so you should hire me. That kind of stuff. In addition to the text. So I think they're taking that next step towards making their online resumes a lot more visual and immersive and taking advantage of, again, this thing called the internet that we have. And it's pretty cool. And with the ability for you to tag your different skill sets, they're making you more searchable for employers to find. And, you know, with recommendations, they're just slowly turning it into that dream resume that we have all had. And I think it'll get to a point where you literally, and this is the dream, I think, for LinkedIn and for me, as an employer, you just go like, well, give me your LinkedIn username and that, you know, we'll be done. And I'll just look that up and we'll go from there.
Right. That's cool. I actually like that because I think I built my own website for my resume, MatthewFurlow.com. And, you know, it's a super simple text-based one, but, you know, it's something that's more complicated that has, you know, more of me in it, I'd be very excited about. And, man, I should go spend some time on LinkedIn, get a better picture of myself. I don't know why, but I actually get, and you know, every once in a while I get job offers.
Oh, yeah, look at that picture.
Hey.
Oh, man.
That's nice stuff, dog.
Dude, you totally look like our grandpa.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Which one?
This is the one where you're wearing this gray t-shirt?
You know, I know
or button-up?
Which grandpa?
Oh, Madden.
Oh, nice.
Dude, seriously, you gotta show that to her mom. Just like, who does this remind you of?
let me
awesome, dude.
That's funny. That's funny that's what that picture is. Yeah, I guess. Okay. All right. I can see it.
You got 165 connections, huh?
Oh, baby.
Man, that's... you're popular.
Dude, I'm popular all over the internet.
You are. Let's see. I have signed out. I don't want to sign out. Why did you sign me out? Great. Come on, LinkedIn. Let's see here. Profile. What am I at? Oh, 231.
Oh, bummer.
Boom.
You're more popular than me.
Man, my picture's better than yours, too.
Yeah. I got to get a new picture. Number one, that was like 70 pounds ago. And number two... my face looks all goofy in it. It was just a bad picture. Like, one of my eyes is all squinty. Oh, man.
You got to write more for your stuff, too.
I know. I actually have to spend some time. That's like 10 times as long as yours. I actually get offers every once in a while because of you know, people who want me to go to China because of work I've done on through LinkedIn. So it's interesting. You know, it would be worth my time probably to
let's see. What are you endorsing? For
Q factor.
SolidWorks, 8 endorsements for SolidWorks.
Yeah,
MapView, AutoCAD, Microsoft Word, getting them up there.
Microsoft Word, big money.
Which is somehow different than Word? I don't understand.
I don't know.
Okay. Let's see, do I even have Microsoft Word on mine? Oh yeah, I got 2 for that one.
Nice.
But I got 16 for market research.
Oh, nice. he says.
I think people are just being generous because I look at the people who endorse me. I'm like, yeah, why would you guys know?
I know. That's kind of how I feel about it, too.
And Char, how do you know I'm good at market research?
Because you talked to her about it once. So, obviously, you're the best person she knows about it. So,
clearly, he's good.
I endorse this.
Which speaks to, you know, some of the limitations, obviously. But you've got to figure out some sort of algorithm for that. Like, oh, this person has been in, you know, like, think like a page rank type of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, this person has been endorsed a lot for market research. So if he endorses you for market research, then you must be good at it too.
Right.
You know, but if you've got like this other person who has zero endorsements or any mention of the word market research, like, okay, yeah, we'll give you a tick up on the number, but it doesn't actually help your rankings for that endorsement at all.
Right.
That skill. Maybe they are doing that. I don't even know. But it sounds like that should be really obvious and a good next step to take for doing those types of things. But I don't know. Dude, on LinkedIn too, I like to just randomly give recommendations of people. That's my gift to the world. This person's amazing. But anyways, cool. I like the changes that they're making. From what I understand, it's, you know, once it all rolls out, you just click edit and you start inserting stuff and make it more graphically interesting.
Yeah, I gotta do that.
I like it. They're taking it to the next level, and I can appreciate that.
Well, they have to, and I'm glad they are. Cool.
There you go.
Nice job at LinkedIn.
I keep going if you want.
I do want you to, because I hope what you're going to do next is the one I want you to talk about.
I probably will.
Okay, good.
The verdict is in.
Yeah, it's what I want you to talk about.
The verdict is in.
All right.
Turns out nobody likes Google Glass.
Yeah, tell me about that. This is fascinating.
Yeah, and so I'm going to get to the very end here, and I'm just going to go big fat, duh. Okay.
Yeah.
Because clearly people are not paying attention to what happened historically with Android in general, but whatever.
Well, you know, you mean people are not paying attention to what happened historically with any new technology, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, because people hated the iPhone when that first was announced.
Yeah.
And because I remember one guy, he was like, I thought this was the stupidest thing ever when it was announced. And I went to go do a hands-on so that I could properly bash it. And I ended up buying one that day.
Right. I mean, I think the iPhone was abnormally warmly accepted compared to a lot of, you know, new technologies and new changes in interface. And it was widely reviled as a retarded idea. A terrible idea.
Keyboard.
It was like, everybody thought it was awful at first, and yet it was one of the best received new ideas ever.
If you remember when Android first came out, I mean, let's be honest, that was a work in progress.
Oh, it was terrible.
And
I had a friend who had the G1. It was awful, man. It was like, how do you put up with this? He's like, dude, it's the future. No, it's not. This is awful.
Not the future yet. No. But keep all of that in your mind while I go through this list of why Google Glass is horrible. Okay?
Tell me. Okay.
So, you know, which they were like, okay, it might be the future, but it's clearly not the present. It's kind of their thing. You're like, duh.
Congratulations, business insider.
Yeah. Well, you know. So here's some of the things that are bad about Google Glass. You know, and I guess one of the reasons why this has become hot topic as of late, because I do notice, kind of stepping back, there are a few things that we talk a lot about. I've talked a lot about Google Glass lately and a lot about Facebook. A lot less about Apple, because for quite a fact, they haven't done anything recently.
Was one of our yearly predictions, BTW. So far we are right on that. I just like to point that out. Apple's not going to do anything exciting this year, and so far they are well on track to continue to not impress us.
Just fine.
Yeah.
Anyways, number one, battery life is terrible.
Yes.
Apparently you only get like 3.5 hours.
Yeah. Well,
I put that in a terrible category for something you're supposed to wear all the time.
It's well, the biggest problem that it has is that it's like constantly using a tremendous amount of data transfer. Like it's wireless data transfer, which is not a energy efficient process.
Is that different than Bluetooth?
Well, it is Bluetooth, but it's wireless. It's a constant. It's a tremendous amount of bandwidth to get from your phone to your eyes and back, because it's not only is it data, but it's data of like pictures.
And what from what I understand is it actually can connect to the internet directly via Wi-Fi itself, which you can't turn off if you go outside. So it's like searching for a wireless network all the time.
Right.
Which I guess your phone does technically, but it's just not quite where it needs to be yet, which I'm like, yeah, that needs to get a lot closer to like 8 or 16, a week.
The biggest problem that they have, from what I understand, is that it's not a replaceable battery. It's hard, it's soldered in. So you can't even have extra batteries with you, which, for me, it's like that's what I would deal with. People think this is ridiculous, but I charge my phone twice a day. And it's an iPhone 5, but I use it constantly. If I'm moving, I'm listening to music. When I'm sitting at my desk, I'm using it as a calculator and an extra screen. I use it all the time. So I'm just like constantly cranking through data and stuff. And so for me, I get the idea that, okay, this thing's going to need extra batteries. I would be okay with that, but yeah, it'd be nice to get it up to be able to last 8 hours so it can last a day.
It will.
Yeah, exactly. It's that will happen eventually, but a replaceable battery, really should have thought that one through.
that'd be a good short term.
Yeah.
Even as a short term fix,
I mean, until it lasts literally 48 hours so you can charge it at or 30 hours so you can wear it all day and then charge it at night, until you get to that point, why doesn't it have a replaceable battery for something you're supposed to wear it constantly use and have on all the time?
And maybe that's part of the thing is you're not going to wear it constantly and all the time. Right. So
actually, this is interesting. This is an interesting broader subject because I made a purchase this week. I bought the Fitbit One.
Really?
Which is basically a Bluetooth connected pedometer.
It's awesome.
It's very cool. I really like it.
We talked about it on the show.
Yes, we have talked about it on the show. It's actually not the wristband one. It's the little
clippy one.
And syncs
automatically to the internet, gives you an online dashboard display.
Oh man, yeah. And the really cool part is my Fitness Pal imports the data automatically as well, because it uses all those API calls.
HP has a special shape up deal event where you can you track your stuff and you get awards and whatever, and it syncs with the Fitbit. It connects to their API. You just sign in with your Fitbit account and you're just kind of like, done. Now you're participating with the HP Shape Up program.
Nice. Cool. It's very cool. I think the biggest problem the biggest limitation that I see to it is entirely the battery. I mean, that's like, I suddenly realized that, like, when am I supposed to charge this thing? Because it's like, you're supposed to wear it at night and it'll track your sleep pattern. And then I want to wear it during the day so it keeps track of how many steps I'm taking. So, like,
stairs you climb too, which is
it was very cool. But I literally thankfully it's got a really long battery life. It lasts like 2-3 days on a charge. But like when I charged it, at my desk, and I just like sat at my desk because I didn't want to get up and walk around and not get the which is like the dumbest way to look at it. But like I realized that's like where I'm at. Like I want it to come with me. But it's kind of an issue. Like it's, this is something that the wearable tech thing needs to be figured out. You talk about smartwatches, like when am I supposed to charge this stuff? Like I want to never take it off, but I need it to charge. This is where wireless electricity comes in. Everybody needs to get on the program. But it'll be interesting. I think Google Glass, the next generation, will almost assuredly have a replaceable battery, because I feel like that's the only way they're going to be able to justify it, because, you know, that's a big problem right now. But, yeah, so continue. What else is wrong with it?
Another one is that it is disorienting and can give you headaches. They say you can actually have trouble – this is ironic – focusing on people or the things around you. Which I'm like, wasn't it supposed to fix that? I don't understand.
Yeah, that's funny.
But it's just the basic idea of your eye has something that's super close that it's trying to focus on, and then it has something far away that it wants to focus on, and it just struggles to go back and forth between the two, which I'm like, eventually your muscles figure it out and do it. But I was watching another tech show, and they were talking about this other guy who's done a whole bunch of experiments with wearable glass technologies type of things. And he has said that he constantly goes through, like, when he's testing something, he'll test it. And then when he takes it off, he has, like, problems. Because your eyes adapt to what's in front of it. And then when you take it away, it's like, I don't understand. And they referred to this experiment, and I remember we talked about this in psychology, where this guy wore a set of glasses that actually turned the world upside down, and then it was really quick. It was like within a week, his eyes had already flipped it over, which apparently your eyes see the world upside down anyways, and then your brain flips it for you to begin with or something weird. So I'm like, upside down? I don't understand.
Right. Well, it's because of how the lens works, it inverts the image onto the back of your retina. And so your brain, in order to, like, because things fall downwards, like, because you have all of the gravitational senses and you have all the balance and stuff, you're visually, you're watching things go on the back of your retina, you're watching things go in the opposite direction that you know they're going. When you close your eyes and jump up and fall down, you have a sense of direction. When you actually do that, everything goes, when you see that on the back of your retina, that goes differently. And so your brain, you know, we've just wired ourselves to flip that image right side up. And what we didn't realize, and why that psychology, that what that experiment was asking the question is that hardwired? Is that image switch, is that something that's just,
right,
you know, where is it? Where is it? It's like,
turns out it's not.
Right. The brain does that, you know, programmatically as opposed to hardware wise. And that experiment proves it, because it'll switch it back to the right way it's supposed to be. Which proves that, you know, or not proves, but indicates to how adaptable the brain is to that sort of a thing.
Yeah. So it's just kind of, which I'm like, we will adapt eventually, but there will probably be problems.
Well, how many people whine about, you know, like 3D glass, you know, 3D movies, and like, it makes me sick and I want to throw up. Like, get over it. It's awesome.
Or you'll see people where they're wearing glasses or contacts the first time. Like, you know, it just gives you a headache when you're first.
It's one of those things where it's like, this is definitely one of those. This is definitely, like, to me, that sort of thing is the same as I hate virtual keyboards because my fingers can't type on it. If you're not used to it yet, give it a second.
Right.
Goodness gracious. Right.
Another one, which is a legitimate one, is the screen's hard to see in bright light. Which, like, okay. And that will get fixed over time as the battery life gets fixed, and, you know, they'll make the display better. Another one, which I'm like, dude, it's Beta Explorer. Give this 5 years. You can't tweak any of the settings in Google Glass. You can't adjust volume levels, display brightness. You can't disable Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. You can't rearrange the application cards on the interface or set the priorities. You can't modify the default screen timeout length. And you can't enable a silent or do not disturb mode. So I was like, all right, those are all legitimate wants.
Those are problems, but they're all firmware issues that they probably will fix before the next version of the glass comes out. That, you know, you'll get a firmware update.
Well, and that was stuff that we saw. That one is exactly what I was thinking about with Android. It was like, yeah, those are all features. And even with the iPhone, they're like, cut and paste, hello.
Seriously.
They'll get around to it. But they're proving the concept. They're getting the most important things right, and, you know, trying to do that. Which they were talking about, like, what's the killer app? What's the one reason why you would buy this to use it? And they're like, what is that?
Brightness and darkness. That's why I would do it.
Well, I mean, but their whole thing was like, figure out the killer app, really get that, and then add the other stuff later, like with the iPhone. Cut and paste was not the killer app, and so they were just like, yeah, we'll get around to it when we get around to it, but we've got higher priorities, like bringing you the full internet.
Right.
which was amazing. And yeah, so anyways, that was it, which I was like, okay, legitimate, but come on, they're just getting started. They said that the voice controls are a bit buggy, which the fun part is they said that there could be someone next to you who says, okay, glass, or gives a command, and it'll listen to him.
Oh, that's funny. That's an interesting dilemma, because, I mean, you know, that's one of those – that's probably much more difficult to do with a software update, whereas that might be require a hardware fix. But that's something, once again, that you can fix. I mean, you know, it's like and my example is going to be if I were to ask Siri – if I hit the Siri button on, you know, on my iPhone – and I'm holding the phone towards me, and I ask it a question at the same time somebody else asks it a question, Siri's going to respond to my question because it's got noise-canceling stuff, and it kind of knows where the sound is coming from. Mm-hmm. That might require additional microphones so that it can do that sort of noise-canceling
sort of
stuff.
Like it can feel your head vibrate when you're talking.
Right. You know, it's reverse. Because it's got the bone mic that, like, vibrates your skull in order to send sound into it. It might need something
cool.
It's very cool. It might need a reverse. Might need a bone mic in order to pick up you talking.
Just mutter to yourself.
Well, I was gonna say it's actually if you read later into the Ender's Game series, Andrew Wiggin, he gets this headpiece that. That does work that way, and like he gets to the point where like he can communicate to this like super intelligent AI that is in his ear or on this like thing just by like moving his mouth and stuff because it knows what his jaw movement is doing, and it works on that principle. And it's like, yeah, we're not that far
from
doing that sort of thing. Yeah, exactly. And it's a good series. You should read it and see the movie in November.
I read the first book, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I listened to it, which was the way the author intended it to be consumed.
Really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of mine, which I don't remember how I got my hands on it, but they did an interview with the author about the book.
Scott Card.
Yeah, that guy. And and that was what he said. He goes, yeah, he actually he designed it to be listened to. So he was like, so good job, because you just listened to it.
That's awesome.
You're welcome, Mr. Card.
What's fascinating about it is, like, originally he wrote it as a novelette. It was a 30-page story.
Yeah.
Was all it would. And I've actually read the novelette.
Well, that was because he wanted to write the other books, and then suddenly realized he needed an intro for those.
Well,
ones.
Because they came back to him and they said we want you to write like a sequel, and he said he wanted to write Speaker for the Dead, and he came back. He's like, how about I do this? How about instead of Speaker for the Dead, I write Speaker for the Dead and Ender's Game? And they're like, are you serious? Okay. Like, great. Yeah, and then Ender's Game becomes, you know, debatably one of the best science fictions ever.
Why are we debating?
Because this is the example I always give. Best science fiction books.
This is so unfair. How come you can type and it doesn't block you out?
I don't actually know. That was weird. Because when you do that, what? You're not going to... This is... So the number one link, CR attempt... I don't want the 50 essential. I want the 50... I hate you so much.
I love Business Insider. See what smart people are reading right now.
Yeah, I know. So, like, number one in, according to Wikipedia, is... Oh, this might actually be in no particular order. This is in chronological order. That's stupid. I don't... This is so dumb. Why? How do I get one? Oh, okay, let's 10 best top 10 sci-fi books of all time. What? Okay, this is not working at all. I'm moving on. The point is that not everybody always agrees that it's number one. Sometimes they think it's number two. But it's always like top three. Now, pretty much no matter who you talk to. Sometimes
what are the other top ranking?
Dune is usually up in the top three. Yeah. Ender's Game is in the top three, And sometimes Foundation, the Foundation series, the first one, gets thrown in there. Sometimes one of your Orwellian, like 1984-esque type books, or Aldous Huxley, those will get thrown in.
Commentaries on society. That's not like science fiction.
Yeah, it's pretty. You think about 1984. It was pretty science fiction-y when it was written.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't the intent for it to be science fiction. It was the intent was to be a commentary on society.
No, it was a dystopic science fiction. It counts.
Fine.
I'm the official ruling body on these things.
Okay. You are more expert at it than I am. Okay, so continuing on with the old list here.
Yeah.
Let's see here. You still need a smartphone to use Glass outdoors because it doesn't have built-in cellular connection, essentially. Thing, because then the battery life would be like 2 hours.
Yeah. What's interesting about that is that they do treat it as a tethered thing. So you're like, people are really annoyed because...
Whatever. I mean, that's what it is. It's like the iWatch is going to be tethered. My Pebble is tethered. That's the way it will be. Your smartphone will be your computer.
Well, eventually, the thing is that the smartwatch isn't tethered. It doesn't require a tethering plan because it's just Bluetooth. It's a additional Bluetooth screen. Whereas because this can actually do internet on the screen, it'd be like having an iPad using, you know, tethered to your iPhone, and so it actually have to pay the extra money to use it as a hotspot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what's annoying about it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. This one's interesting. It's hard to take off glass. Which I was like,
I've seen people take it off. Yeah.
But that what they were saying is that it's just one piece and it can't be folded to make smaller. Which,
once again, this is such a stupid article, Business Insider. Why would you even mention that? It's a beta thing physically. Like the next one will have foldable ear things. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And then I said, responding to messages is tough. You can't really edit your responses. If you make a mistake, you just got to start all over. Well, very next sentence is like, much of these things can be fixed over time by Google. These are hardware and software tweaks. Like,
yeah. Thanks.
But they still come back to like, they're like, what is the use case for Glass? What is that killer app where you're like, I want this so I can do X that I can't do any other way, which I think is like the exact same thing. People were like, well, what about the iPad? What's so amazing about that? that you can't do with your phone. You're like, well, just try it. Okay. And you'll understand.
Right. And it's one of those things. I mean, this is such a classic. It's a new, you know, I talk about this on the show every once in a while. This is one of my principles of creativity and technological advancements. If you learn nothing from the show, tell all your friends this one. It's that the music will always fill the venue that it's – the music will be designed for and fill the venue that you put it in. If you're performing in a big hall, you will write music that sounds good in a big hall. If you're playing music on the radio, you will write music that sounds good on the radio. And you will use the technology, you will fill the venue, and changes in venue are oftentimes as much a driver of creativity as anything. And what they're doing is they're creating a new venue. They're literally creating a new way to design stuff. And so the question becomes, yeah, what's the killer app? That's a dumb question because there isn't the killer app right now. The killer, you know, what they're asking is they're saying what they want to know is, why should I learn to paint? What you point me at the work of genius? And you're like, well, okay, Leonardo hasn't painted, you know, his Da Vinci yet. And that was what? I don't know.
Wow.
That was really dumb.
Leonardo hasn't painted his Da Vinci yet.
Yeah, exactly.
If he ever will.
Yeah, probably not. But the point is that there is no work of genius yet because we're just working out the mechanics of painting. Like, right. You know, and the thing is, and this is actually the reason why I wanted to get to it, because There's another video that I want y'all to go watch. It's going to be on the website, furloughbros.com or furloughbrothers.com, if you are so inclined. It's an Engadget video, but they went to this, it was a tech show, and it's the MIT Media Labs Smart Objects Eyes On is what they call it. And it's a form of, what's the word? I'll describe it because it's not actually the greatest video in the world, but you should watch it anyways. What's the not virtual reality, where like you overlay images? No. We talked about it. I can't believe I can't remember what the term is, but it's like when you have a video of your screen, like you're taking a video and you overlay like images and stuff on top of it. It's not virtual reality. It's a it was like the term of the year 2 years ago. Everybody loved it. Enhanced reality?
No, augmented reality.
Augmented reality. There we go. So it's basically an augmented reality display, and it's on his iPad. And what's really cool is he's got these two boxes sitting on a table. One of them has a little knob and like a speaker area. And then there's another one that's just a speaker. And what he does is he takes his screen and he goes, like, basically this is an augmented reality. This, all it has is a very simple interface. It has a knob that you can use for volume. And he goes, but what happens is when you have your iPad, you point it at it, and all of a sudden a whole slew of display comes up augmented on top of the thing. And it all does it like it knows where it is, so it keeps the image in proper relation to the speaker, and it shows you all the different channels and stuff and all of this different things. And he goes, so what you do is now, instead of this not being volume, now it allows you to pick different channels. So as he like goes through it, it allows him to like cycle through stuff, and he can interact with the physical object looking at the screen, looking at the iPad, or he can interact with the iPad. And when he interacts with the iPad, he goes, like, let's say, you know, we've got the music playing now. Okay, that's cool. He goes, but I want to turn on this speaker. And so he angles the thing so that it can see the radio, the main mount, and the speaker. And on the iPad screen, he clicks on the radio, and then he drags to the speaker, and you see a line draw across it, and all of a sudden the speaker turns on because they're all three connected. They're all working together. And so it's this augmented reality, and it goes, now the screen goes away, and all you have is this cool looking speaker with like a volume control. Like, that's really awesome in a not practical at all sort of way, but I really like it in concept. And what I like about it in concept is this idea of the augmented reality, and because all of a sudden, and this is like the brilliance of it, is that this thing, you know, the iPhone, its brilliance, you know, one of the things that made it brilliant was the idea that we're going to take this small screen that everybody has, and we're going to make it a huge screen. And by making it a huge screen, we're going to turn everything into a visual button or a virtual button on it. And basically what they're doing is they're making the argument is that when you use augmented reality properly, everything becomes a big screen. And so if you just hold your iPad in front of you, now everything's a touch surface. Now everything is a display surface. And if you design stuff specifically for it, and you design a world that kind of all works together, all of a sudden you turn your screen off and nothing has a display on it. But when your screen's in front of you, now it's got a display. Well, that's really cool, except it's annoying when you have to hold an iPad.
Right.
But when you have Google glasses, this is when all of a sudden everything is a big screen. And that's the thing that, like, you just don't understand. It's like your dashboard on your car goes away. Why would you need a dashboard? All the information's on your heads-up display on your face. And so now it's exactly where it needs to be at all times. You never need to look at the speedometer on your dash because your speed is just on your face. It's in the universe in front of you. You just see it. Or, you know, or like all of your radios. It completely changes how you design it. What it does is it allows you to change how you design the world that you're looking at.
How crazy would that be, where it's like you have a television in your living room that's a blank screen, but you're all looking at the television watching your own channel?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think you would actually do that specifically, but the idea that TV screens. Well, it's funny. I mean, I think we've all kind of felt this for a while, but it's like, I don't need a TV screen in my house. So why would I need that? What I want is I want a couple of screens that fit over my eyes that are super high resolution and fill up my view. Yeah. That's really what I want. The only thing that I really would miss from that experience is the sound. I want the sound that's going to make my body rumble. I'm going to feel it in my bones when the dinosaur takes a step. Yeah, and that's the only limitation to that technology that I have. But if you remember,
so I have your smart chair to go with it.
Exactly. For those of you that have been listening to the show for far too long, when we first started doing the show, I told of this experience. I went to this music festival in San Jose, California.
That's right.
And one of the things that they were doing, there's a lot of really good music. One of my favorite bands was playing there. But my cousin and I went, and she and I walked in, and we saw this like really weird scene with a bunch of people like dancing around doing their thing, but there's no music playing. We're like, what the heck is this? So we walk up. And what they do is they hand you these headphones, and you pop the headphones on, and what you realize is the DJ who's doing his, like, mix thing, he is controlling the signal, and the signal is a short, high-quality band signal that's going to all the headphones. You put the headphones on, all of a sudden you're in the middle of a club. There's music going on all over the place, but you can't hear it. You've got headphones on. Yeah, and all of you are listening to the same music. You're all singing together. You're all dancing together, and it's just like a big, like, party scene out in the middle of nowhere. Music's going. That's what it's going to be like on your eyes. That's what it's going to be like in your ears. Like, all of a sudden, everything becomes like you can have a party.
A big anywhere. Party.
Exactly.
I love it.
And it's like when you start to think about it in that context, when you start to think about
Why do you need to go to Mars? Just bring Mars to you.
That's what I'm saying, dude. Pretty much, what's that one movie with Total Recall? It's a Total Recall experience. That's it. Except with all the without all the lobotomies and murder and death and whatnot. Hopefully, right? No guarantees. But you know, it's one of those things where it's like it drives me nuts that people are so short-sighted and like, but what's the killer app? You know, like you can't see this. Like, you can't even – you're so short-sighted, you can't imagine this at all. And what really bothers me most about Google Glass, honestly, the biggest limitation to it is it's only one screen. It's only one eye. So you can't do
– Today.
Today. Well, that's the important part. You can't do split images. So you can't do 3D-esque things. But – you know, you can't give dimension to stuff, but it's like you've got this device that they're gonna put.
Did you hear? Flat's the new thing, man. Everything's going flat. Who wants 3D?
That's textures. Totally what it is.
Just flat.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Johnny Ives. I'm actually super stoked to see what they're doing with iOS 7. I think Johnny Ives is a genius of design, and I love the Windows Phone 8 interface because I'm all about like the shadowless textures or like super simple textures super simple flat shapes, shades and stuff. I love it. But the fact of the matter is I also like 3D interaction. Like I'm a complex individual is what
you
I am.
You are. It sounds like.
But
just give me simple 3D.
Exactly. Done. But I think it's one of those things where it's like very soon here, you're going to be able to have like these really crazy, you know, visual overlays on everything. And, you know, people who ask the question, like, what's the killer app on this all? You have a device that knows what you're looking at and it knows where your head is. It knows what you're looking at and it can add information to the rest of the world. And yeah, right now they're adding the easy stuff like text messages and emails and the time, but that's not,
directions.
I'm going to say, but that's not what makes it exciting. What makes it exciting is when it really, like, all of a sudden, you know, that one.
So how long do you think it'll take for that all of a sudden moment to happen?
I'll bet next year.
Oh.
I'll bet by next year, MIT, they've already done a thing where, like, your friend, they do, like, a little, like they do a circle in front of you. Google Glass identifies what they look like, and now it'll track them in a crowd. So it will pick out where your friend is faster than you will, and it'll highlight them. You know, stuff
That's
like
crazy.
That, you'll start to see that sort of thing take off really, really quickly. And because you get even more processing power from like your phone, from the headphones. And this is, I was about to say this terrible thing, but like Okay, so you go into a bar and you're like, you know how you usually have beer glasses and which makes the girls cuter? Now Google Glass can help too. It's augmented reality. It makes everything better. Like this, like kind of ugly everything. Chick.
Well, so, like, I don't think it'll happen in a year. Stuff. But I think 3 years from now.
I think what you'll see is the beginnings of it. And you'll see the first apps that really do augmented reality right in next year. And I bet within 5 years. It'll be one of those things where people will ask the question, how did I do this before? And what will become really weird is that within 10 years, you'll start to realize that so much of our world has been designed to be looked at on the other side of a sheet of glass, whether it's pulling your phone up and using your phone as a piece of glass because you don't have your glasses with you, or your Google Glasses, or your iPad, but you will realize that we're going to start designing a world. All of our and our industrial design will be made in the context of something that doesn't need that you're supposed to look through glass at this thing. And when you turn the glass off, you'll see a different world. Or everybody who's looking at the same object will see it differently. Everybody who looks at the refrigerator will see it differently. Mom will see, whatever, and son will see whatever, and dad will. This is a terrible example because it's not, there's no examples given. But that's these real world objects, these physical things why would you paint your walls anymore when you can just do whatever design you want on your headset? You're just like everybody in the house could have a different house design as you walk into the room.
Finally, go to a live football game and see the line and follow the ball. And
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Add the stats to the screen that I care about. And you
right.
Can add stats
highlight the characters
about.
That you care about.
I care about this player. Follow him. Let me know when he goes into the game.
Exactly. And you just sit there and you go like, and we're going to design a world that all these things interact together. We already are designing a world where all these things interact
Mass
together.
Customization. That's what that's going to enable. And it's like allow for like multiple windows on your screen of life.
Right. And it's funny. These things, like, they sound crazy and like they'll happen so fast and like, wow, I don't know if we can deal with that. We're like, dude, we're on the iPhone 5. It's 5 years old. And it's radically changed how we interact with our world. Like, don't worry about it. This is going to be fast. It's going to be breakneck speeds where the price of these things are just going to drop. The battery life is going to extend. The connectivity is going to improve. The overall experience is going to be better. And, there will always be a $800 pair of glasses. Probably made by Apple. But there will also always be a $100 pair of glasses, probably made by, somebody who makes cheap stuff. But they'll all be kind of pointed in this direction of, mass customization, the augmented reality writ large. And I don't know. To me, that's exciting. To me, that's like really cool. That is the killer app. And it frustrates me when you're like, dude, how y'all not excited about this? I don't actually get why you're like, you wonder at all. I don't know. I realized.
No, I just had a viewer send the Productivity Future Vision by Microsoft from 2011. Where, do you remember that, that video where they, Microsoft shows off like it's a huge augmented reality and, their vision for it. Yeah, like that, but totally awesomer. Okay.
Yeah, it'll actually have some color because people like colors. Like that's the worst part of that is like everything is like pasty. It's like hospital white and transparent. Whereas like I think that's one of the exciting things about this stuff is that you think about it. It's like I actually think that this will add more art to the world. This will add more.
And
color
I would say
to the
like
world.
This is real too. It's not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a concept video.
Right. I think it adds more – the biggest problem that these things will run into is that they're going to add so much more noise to the world in
in the
traditional sense of information that conflicts with what the information is supposed to get there. But over time, and I think we're already starting to see a trend with this with iPhones, is these like people are learning how to use them to be more productive and pay more attention. And it's like one of the things that I do is I sometimes will get in trouble because it's like I'll sit down to a meal and I'll play a game of Sudoku. right out the gate. I'll open up Sudoku and I'll play a game. Because it's like my mind just gets chattery and buzzy. And what people didn't realize before cell phones is I just never paid attention. I never engaged. Because my brain was just busy thinking about other things. Whereas I've learned that if I play a game of Sudoku, it's sort of like getting up. It's like letting a five-year-old do a lap around the building and burn off a little bit of energy. It allows me to focus. That's right. I do have the brain of a five-year-old when it comes to my attention span. And
that's okay. I'm watching this video. I'm totally enthralled by it. So go ahead.
Yeah, I get it. I shrug my shoulders in this whole thing, and I just like, I don't know. I feel like people have really missed the boat on why this is exciting.
They'll come around.
There's no imagination in the world.
Well, there is excitement about it, and I think it's just some people are like, come on, guys, really, is it that exciting? And it's like, yeah, it is actually.
Yeah, you're an idiot. You've got no appreciation for the future.
All right. We have spent entirely way too much time on that topic, which will make it interesting for cuts later. But that's all right.
Yeah, we can move on.
Let's move on. we'll bring it up a notch to something lighter and more fun. Because it's a game, actually.
Yes.
There's a new iPhone app game out there, so all you Apple lovers, you can download this for free. Everyone else, sorry. It's called Dots. Ever play that game, Dots?
Is that the one where you like draw lines and you make squares and stuff?
That's the one. That's the one.
The girl I was dating before this show started, that was like the first game app that she downloaded on her iPhone. Cause she had a 3G, and she and I used to play that for an hour against each other. So it was like one of the first games to have.
So this is actually single player. It's not multiplayer.
Oh, that's super lame.
It's made by BetaWorks. No, it's super cool. Basically what happens is, think of it like Bejeweled, I guess, where you have a bunch of dots that come down by colors and you need to connect the colors. And, you know, so the more you connect, the more points you get. And if you can create a square, it deletes all those colors and then more colors fall down as you go. And so it's all swiping. But what makes this game awesome is not the game itself, because you're like, okay, it's dots, whatever. Oh, and you have 60 seconds to do as many as you can, essentially. And then you can buy special powers, dots, to like, you know, get rid of a color or whatever, stop the clock for 5 seconds, that kind of thing.
This is so thoroughly annoying. My life just became awful.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to download the game, but iTunes won't let me. Now, mind you, it's free, but my credit card information or my debit card information that's connected to my account is no longer good. And you want to know why it's no longer good? Turns out, I was in Cabo. Somebody was copping down my debit card information and then went on a little bit of a spending spree with my money, and I had to cancel the card, and it's not going to end in disaster. I'm going to get the money back. But I don't have a card anymore. So it's like this weekend was one of the scariest parts of money-wise. I had like a limited amount of cash because I had to go to the bank and withdraw cash.
Scary.
Yeah, it was weird. I had to like make sure I didn't spend all of my money today. And now I can't download free apps on my iPhone. This is super lame. I hate that person so much. I hate that person more because of the inconvenience than the fact that they were stealing my money. That's super annoying. I'm so annoyed by that. Oh my goodness.
Ugh. So anyways, when you get your card back, you should check it out. Because what's cool about it is it's just like super, super, super well designed.
Yeah.
Just like the intro, how it starts is amazing. The animations are fun and it's minimalist. But there's just a few games out there. What's the other one? I think I've mentioned it on here. Let's see here. I go to games, go to puzzles. Oh yeah, Letterpress is the other one. But there's just a few games out there that are just like super well designed. And this is one where I think other people are going to copy the style of this game, and you're going to see it showing up in more and more apps. Dude, it's starting to blow wind here. I know what that means.
What does that mean?
Here's a secret Oregon weather tip for those of you who haven't figured it out yet. When it gets really windy out, storm's coming, unfortunately. It means it's going to pour very soon. But that's the way it is. That's the warm front or cold front or whatever coming through before that happens. Mm. It happens every time in Oregon. It's sad because we had a beautiful weekend. But I guess at least we got that. Anyways, I'm saying that because I have a window open and it is starting to blow like crazy. But yeah, Dots, it's pretty cool. And the game itself is fun and, you know, super simple to play. But it's the design of it. You look at it and you go, this, there will be a ton of apps that are designed like this in the future. So if you download it, you'll start to see elements of it picked up in other places.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I wish I could see it.
Wish I could see it.
Thanks, Mexico. That's what we get for letting them have their independence. What? That's awful.
Cinco de Mayo!
Yay! Yeah.
So Facebook also released their quarterly earnings this year.
Oh, baby. Did they make a lot of money?
Yeah, they did. But what was interesting about it, and I love the picture, just like Facebook, it was pretty good. And they were like, the problem is that Facebook's doing okay.
Yeah.
They are, you know, their stock price right now is around like $27.43 is where they're hanging out. And they're like, but they're showing – they are already showing signs of being a mature company, which they're like, you guys are still pretty darn young, but you're already flattening off and showing signs of significant slower growth. And so they're just like, you know, and the point was, they're like, is this a sign that like Facebook's moving on, or, you know, they're over the hill, jump the shark, whatever. Or does the tech industry just really move that fast? And they said like part of their concerns too was that the people, you know, under 25, they're moving on. They're disengaged from Facebook. And so they brought that up in the earnings call. And they were like, no, that's not what we see. We see that they're still highly engaged and, you know, extremely active. And they're awesome. We love them. And yeah, sure, they're using other social networks like Instagram, which we happen to own. So we love that. But but they're like, but we don't think this is a zero-sum game. We think that the younger generation are going to join multiple social networks, and we're going to be one of them, and we're okay with that. To which they were like, you got any data to back that up, or are you just going to say that it's fine? To which they didn't have any. But basically what their independent surveys have shown, that teenager engagement in social networks is down to 33%, which when it was like 42% even just a few months ago. So they're like, we're seeing stuff drop off, and they're seeing a huge shift to mobile, obviously. But they're like, but they're just, their growth, they're still growing. And you look at some of their growth numbers and I'm like, I will take that in the toner business any day. But it's just a lot less than what it was. Cause like a year ago it was 45%, and now they're down to 38%. And you know, they're just like,
I've always felt that, and you know, maybe I haven't been clear about this in the show, but it's like your Facebook page is, you know, they're going to, number one, they're huge. They're still unbelievably gigantic, and they're like, you know, they're starting to lose some members, or, you know, they're having engagement problems in some demos. But the thing is it's like, you know, how many, and I still don't think that people really have an appreciation for the fact that, like, how many services do we use that we sign in via Facebook? How many games do you have on your iOS device that you sign in via Facebook? How many services does Facebook own that are things that people use regularly? And it's the whole Instagram thing. Like, Instagram's going to work out and is going to, I think, prove the, prove as the model of what Facebook needs to do, is these different brands and these different services. Yeah, things move on, but the company is Facebook. I think people get so caught up on the product of, oh no, the product's going to go in demise, that you forget that this is a giant tech company. They're not, you know, this is one of their products. Yeah, it's their most profitable product. But the idea that, you know, it's going to die away and it's going to go away, it just seems ridiculous. No. And the thing is,
their other one was, yeah, they were saying, like, Facebook, their profits went down a lot. And they said, but part of that was because they were spending a lot in R&D and investing in growing users. Right. They're like, but you're not seeing the growth. So they're like, here's Facebook spending a lot of money, but they're watching their growth slow anyways. And so they're like, you know, is it possible that they do spend themselves into a big problem because they don't slow down when they need to? And, you know, and so it's not necessarily that we, the users, kill Facebook, but they accidentally kill themselves.
Well, that's possible. I'm not going to say that that's not possible. Like, companies can be stupid, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see the passport of the internet, your home, your internet profile mature. Is what you're, well, I think that's what, I guess that's the best way to put it, is you're seeing your internet profile, where your kind of pictures go to live and where your information goes, where your phone number and your home address and your, you know, your sort of your social network, that's where it's coming to a slowdown. I think people expect that it's like, well, what's going to replace Facebook? The thing is I don't think anything replaces Facebook. I think you get other services. And that's their argument, that there's not a zero-sum game, I think is the most accurate. People aren't deleting their Facebook in order to go to Instagram. They're using Facebook less along with Instagram. It's not like it's not going to be like there's going to be another service along that comes and there's going to be a groundswell and it completely replaces Facebook, like you saw Facebook do to MySpace. That just doesn't make any sense. People don't want to invest the time in rebuilding their online profiles and networks. What they want is they want a thing that is different. The reason why kids move over to Instagram is because grandma's not on Instagram, but they still need to be able to interact with grandma. So guess what they're going to keep? They're going to keep Facebook, and they're going to use Instagram for their friends, which is this – I mean, like, that was actually one of the reasons why MySpace lingered as long as it did, is because it became this new, like, fort or this new, you know, battleground to go back as kids with your old friends, because mom and dad had moved on to Facebook. And, you know, it just, like – I shrug my shoulders and sit there and I go, this is such a complex thing, but at the same time, it's pretty simple in that there is a requirement for this. And we used to do it poorly before the digital age. Now we do it very efficiently. It is a requirement. It does need to exist. It has always – your phone book, your personal phone book has always existed, and this is a great way to do it. It's an incredibly powerful phone book. In a lot of ways. So the idea that that would just go away because my face space, you know, comes up and it's just, you know, or Instagram would replace that. No, it won't. Reddit can't replace that. You know, a lot of your social networks, quote unquote, that are, I'm doing my finger quotes, are threatening your resonance time on Facebook, don't replace Facebook. Now, and the thing is that in a lot of ways they supplement Facebook. Now, what Facebook really needs to do, and the big thing that they need to work on, is competing with Google on getting Facebook generated ads on people's websites, getting their ad money from other sources than just the Facebook homepage. And they're working on it. They're getting better at it. It's a
process. The whole thing was like, you know, Facebook was on track for like world domination and companies like Google had to be look out for them.
Yeah.
And I was like, and now that we're seeing all the books and everything that's going on, you're like, actually they're just like everybody else. They're not king of the hill or, you know, king of the world or internet, whatever.
Yeah.
But it sounds like, you know, if they do figure that out, maybe they will be. But because Google was a huge threat at first.
Right. And I shrug my shoulders and I sit there and I go, like, the biggest threat that Facebook does have is from Google Plus. But I think, weirdly enough, I think those will coexist. As Google Plus being the center, being the center node of your Google universe, and Facebook being the center node of your like social life, and you know, and a bigger communication network, and you know, different things for different places. And the truth and the reality of it is, you know, as much as I've made fun and questioned the wisdom of having your personal profile and your business profile in BlackBerry 10, there's a certain amount of legitimacy to that. Like, I have three different online profiles. I have my Facebook universe, my Google universe, and my work universe, really. And my work universe has a certain set of passwords and connectivity and different services that all work together. Mm-hmm. I've got the Google universe, which kind of powers all of my personal utilities, whether it's my phones or my internet browsers. And then I have my Facebook universe that I connect to all of my games and music profiles and random websites that I connect to. And that segmentation is important in individuals. We've all always done that. And it allows you to manage those networks. And I think that the idea that one of these would come and replace them all, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Why would, you know, I don't know. I think Facebook isn't just being overly optimistic. I think there's a legitimate argument to be made about the fact that these things aren't zero-sum games. Just because one game doesn't mean that everybody else loses. And there's definitely more space in all of this, especially as our attention spans, you know, become shorter and shorter and shorter. Yeah. There tends to be more and more space for more and more services. And you know, weirdly enough, yeah. So they generate more real estate for companies. So
you still love Facebook. I get it. It's cool. Who cares what the data says? It's all right.
I like to go with my gut. I've got truthiness.
Fair. That's fair. Fair enough. Any last thoughts?
Before we close it up
for the evening?
I talked about my Fitbit, right?
You did. Your latest purchase. Is it working? What's your average steps so far? How long have you owned it for?
My average steps, I bought it on Wednesday, I believe. I don't know if it gives me my average.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've taken 26. No, that's not right. Looks like I've taken. What is that number? Why would you give me that? It tells me that I've burnt. Oh, okay. My daily average calories is 3,000 calories. My daily average steps is 12,000 steps.
That's good.
I peaked on Thursday at 22,000 steps.
I did that on Saturday.
Nice. On Wednesday, this is the impressive one, though. On Wednesday, I only had 7,500 steps, but I bought it at 8 p.m. on Wednesday. So from 8 p.m. to midnight, I went 7,000 steps. So that was a good day, I guess.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, that's how I roll, man. And then fours, I have a daily average of 7, peaking today at 16. So
it's a lot of stairs.
Yeah, I don't even notice because I take them 2 at a time and I like run up them nowadays. But
fair enough. Cool. I'm glad it's working out for you.
I know. I like it a lot.
Those are neat. I like the scale also sounds like it's pretty cool.
I know. I want one so bad. I've decided I'm going to get one when I finally become an adult and move out, because I'll need a scale. And so I've had my eye on it.
What counts as being an adult?
Moving out.
Ah.
So it's the last. Okay.
And you'll be able to afford a scale once you move out?
Yeah. I am planning ahead. Okay. I am going to be financially savvy about what I do.
I like it.
I can't be financially savvy about it right now because I'm not doing it.
Okay. Gotcha.
I'm financially savvy about the rest of my life, but.
So do you have anything you want to announce about moving plans right here, right now, or is it, you know, still under wraps?
It's under wraps, as in,
or you know, whatever, you know, TBD. You don't want to talk about it right now.
I don't mind talking about it.
It's just a very exciting future.
It's a very exciting future. Sometime in the next few quarters, we will be having big announcements that you all should invest heavily in. Now, pretty much like my roommate, the problem is little interpersonal community, you know, a little behind the scenes of Matthew Furlow's life. I had some roommates lined up.
Some of that.
I know. I had some roommates lined up, and they sort of are bailing because their company is moving them to different parts of California, and evidently you can't commute from San Jose to Roseville every day. It's like a 3-hour drive.
Commute.
Yes, it would be. I argue that they should make it, you know, they should stick with it, stay the course, but they disagree. It's one of those you just shrug your shoulders and like, whatever, like I want to live in a house with three other young men who are preferably single, so that we can all be of equal temperaments and intentions. And when I stay up late, you know, having a good time, I ain't going to get people complaining about it. But it also, you know, there are some requirements that we're looking to fulfill. And because our parents are yours and my parents are pretty amazing, it makes it very difficult to leave because it's very easy to stay.
Right.
So, that is like the epitome of a first world problem. If you could define them.
Cool. All right. Glad it's going well.
Yeah.
And as you see, I'm in my fortress of solitude, and I'll be here for a little bit. Working, man. Getting my size.
Yeah, stop typing.
I'm sorry. Working and getting my exercise. Our father is coming up next weekend, and I'm shocked that you're not joining him, actually.
What?
But
I didn't know that. I had no idea.
Yeah, really? He's coming up, and in 2 days we're going to install a dishwasher, garbage disposal, build a cabinet, build that microwave shelf thing like we did last
time. Nobody invited me. What the heck?
Hey, you are more than welcome to come. He's driving up Thursday evening. We're going to work all day Saturday, all day Friday. Friday then Saturday, and then he's driving back Sunday afternoon.
I definitely am going to work Friday and Saturday, so.
That's why you didn't get invited.
Yeah. Well, I should have gotten invited so I could turn it down.
Well, consider yourself invited.
I appreciate it now.
Can you please come? Please come? Please come? Please?
No,
please? I'm really genuinely disappointed that you couldn't come. So he's going to come up and we're going to do a power session and get as far as we can.
That's awesome.
And then I will finish painting, redoing the carpet, installing a window, repairing a wall, and yeah.
Nice.
I'll get it all done within a month somehow. That's my goal. Get it done by our mom's graduation.
All right. So let me clarify. So you're installing the garbage disposal and sink and everything in the area you're leaving, right?
Yes.
Yeah, your wife's going to be super stoked about that.
No, because the new place we moved into has a dishwasher.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I know that was the complaint last time we did this two-day extraordinary sesh, was that we installed it all in the place that you weren't going to live in. So you got to live
inside. We're also doing a brand-new countertop, brand-new, making it, whatever, laminate. And so, yeah, it's gonna be awesome once it's done, and we'll want to move back in because it's going to be awesome. But we like our new place. It's got some perks. We've noticed and you'll notice this when you do housing stuff. Like, we have a whole bunch of new built-ins, so there's a ton of storage, but we have less countertop or surface space, and less wall space. So we're like, so we have like this huge whiteboard, and we're like, we don't have a wall that it will fit on. So we're like, okay, you got to figure that out.
Google Glass, man. Get on it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, that's my life right now. But, hey, awesome. Thanks, everybody, for listening. It was mostly tech stuff. We got our superheroes. We talked about Netflix, LinkedIn, And we eventually got to tech things like Google Glass.
I was going to say, I feel like this is a more distracted episode than normal. I hope people enjoy
it. But it was awesome. It's good. It's okay. It's all right. So go see Iron Man 3 if you haven't already. And then tune in next week for
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. Hopefully the 4th was with you yesterday. Nah. And all that fun stuff. Again, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My what was the drinks that you liked? You said you liked
tequila and Coronas.
Yeah, no, what's the one that my wife likes? The margaritas. That's her. She were to drink, that would be it.
Oh man. If
anyways,
I had margaritas that guy. Last night.
Huh? Cool. We didn't. Or today. anyways. That guy over there who enjoys his mixed drinks is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.